This is Simon Brooks auditioning for Crick by Mr. Carl R. Beer. Chapter 1. Stay a while, I'll keep you forever. The meagre amber glow from a lone candle shaded the three people sat at the table, highlighting certain features, while swathes of blackness hid others. A girl with copper blonde hair tipped her face forward, revealing sunken cheeks and roving wild eyes. She tapped her chipped fingernails on the wooden tabletop, watching the two sleeping boys with growing impatience. Crimble no doubt left her in the near darkness as a new torment. He often changed his games in an attempt to get her to react. Since coming to the Marsh House, she had come to prefer the shadows. Even in this dim light, she refused to look down at herself. A moth circled the candle, drawn by the light before the heat beat it back. She envied the insect. At any moment it could fly into the flame. Having endured timeless misery here, she saw no end to Crimble's imprisonment. When Crimble first brought in the two boys, she mistook them for stuffed dolls. Neither moved in his arms, nor had they stirred when he arranged them on the chairs. Once Crimble had gone, the boy's snores, so like the soft passage of wind through leaves, made her want to cry. The boy, with sandy hair, rapidly moved his eyes beneath his lids. The candle illuminated their tanned skin, which made her inspect her once sun-browned arms, appearing to her now like the underside of gigantic white slugs. Blood matted the boy's fair hair and stained one cheek in maroon swirls. She wanted to reach over to feel the warmth from another living person. When he brought the boys in, her captor ignored her and she ignored him. During her long imprisonment in the windowless room, she could not recall a time Crimble had spoken directly to her. Again, his parting words were not for her ears. The scraps of her last meal spoiled next to her arm. She picked at the meat, leaving the raw vegetables on the plate, moving the peas around with her fingers. Her stomach ached, but not trusting the food Crimble brought her, she refused to eat more than necessary. A coppery taste filled Jack's mouth. Moving his tongue around, he touched the roof of his mouth, where it clove to his dry palate. He recalled the tea he drank earlier, filled with honey. It did not seem so long ago for his mouth to dry out. Images of Bill collapsing and then Crimble attacking him from behind roused Jack from his gentle quandary. His head swam when he opened his eyes, making him dizzy and sick to the stomach. Fearing he would throw up, he tried to raise his hands to his face, but coarse rope bound his wrists to a chair. Frightened, he jerked at his bonds, burning his skin. He knows how to tie good knots. With a start, Jack looked up from his secured arms. At first he did not see the speaker, only a small candle flickering atop the table. Then he saw a girl, half submerged in shadow, watching him through eyes as dark and dazzling as black diamonds. "Who are you? What's happening here? Release me." "Release you?" she laughed, throwing back her head. "Release you," she repeated, banging the table with the palm of her hand. "If I could get you out of here, do you think I would be here myself? He has you now, and your podgy friend." For the first time, Jack noticed Bill sitting next to him. "Don't worry," said the girl. "He's sleeping off Crimble's wonder drug. He'll come around soon enough." "He drugged us?" "He drugged him," she said, pointing a slender finger at Bill. "I think with you he had to be a bit blunter. There's blood in your hair. I suppose you didn't drink Crimble's tea as greedily as your friend." Her voice croaked as though she had not spoken in a long time, and when she smiled her chapped lips cracked, drawing a little blood. "Why has he done this to us? We haven't done anything to him," said Jack, disbelieving what had happened. "We only came here to escape the wolves. We meant no harm. We spilt the bones outside by mistake. If he's mad about that, I can mend the box and put them all back in." "Do you want some food?" She pushed a plate towards him. "I'll feed you if you like." "No, I don't want to eat," replied Jack, agitated with how passive she took his captivity. "Untie me!" She ignored his demands. Leaning back in her chair, she opened her mouth in a wide yawn. I wonder what time it is. I tend to lose track in here. What's wrong with you? Take these bloody ropes off me before he comes back. I tried to keep count once, she said, ignoring his struggles. I tapped the table every second until my fingertips bled. Another time I repeated my mother's name until the words became so muddled in my head, I don't know what I was saying. The same damp smell he had smelt when he first entered the house cloyed the air, making him gag. Peering into the dark room, he spied rags heaped on the floor. White sheets reflected enough candlelight to make out a crude bed. Beside the bed was a rusted basin. He presumed the girl slept on the sheets and used the large bowl for a toilet. I left home to find some mushrooms for my mother. Looking back at the girl, Jack noticed, behind the harrowed lines and sunken cheeks, how young she was. Horror, as thick as winter stew, rose up in his throat. The girl was only a few years his elder, not a 30-year-old woman as he had first surmised. Storm clouds brewed on the horizon, making me hurry, she continued, oblivious to his scrutiny. I followed an old path my grandfather cleared out. The stone flags he used were still visible after so many years. The path dips and then skirts a few hills before leading into a meadow where I collect mushrooms. This time the path led me astray. She frowned. Instead of leading me south, the stone flags turned to the east. I should have turned back then, but my curiosity got the better of me. Remembering how the trees and foliage had negotiated his own path eastward during his escape from the wolves pricked Jack's attention. Years of mud and intrusive weeds had half buried the path, she continued in her vacant, cracking voice. Had my grandfather also placed them? A divergence in the path, which had until then gone unnoticed. It took me through the unfamiliar parts of the wood. The animals changed from the small birds and squirrels I befriended near my home. Larger shapes now swooped through the trees, tracking my every step. Frightened, I wanted to turn back, although when I did, I found the path extended before me with nothing behind but forest floor. Nightmarish shapes, half glimpsed in the trees, kept me on the path. Stepping from the cobbled stones would have meant sure death. The bog ended the path. Memories clouded her face. She refused to look at Jack. When she again spoke, her voice clipped the air like shears. Smoke rose from the east, drawing me through the wet mud until I found this house. Crimble opened his door to me, and despite his fearsome appearance, I trusted him enough to enter. He gave me some of his tea, and here I am. Won't your mother be looking for you? Anger compressed the girl's lips into a thin line. Of course she would, she leaned forward. Can you tell me where we are? The path which led me astray would appear normal to my parents, leading them to the meadow. My father, with all his tracking skills, could not follow a bewitched route. She wiped away a tear. Your fat friend is stirring. She returned her stare to the flickering flame. Her sorrow dulled the reflected light. Jack turned his head as Bill slowly opened his eyes. Opening his mouth, Bill coughed up tea. With a groan, Bill leant his head back, cracking it against the chair. Careful, said Jack, alarmed. What happened? Asked Bill, his skin waxy in the poor light. You drank drugged tea, said Jack. The drug will wear off soon, said the girl, with some sympathy. You'll have a headache for a while, but there's no lasting effect. Close your eyes until the dizzy spell passes. Surprise on hearing a girl's voice brought Bill forward in his chair. Who are you? Inara, she replied after a pause, as though trying to recall her name. Don't fight against the ropes, she said, as Bill discovered his bound wrists. We can't just remain here, said Jack. No one knows where we are. Our only chance is to escape. What's going on, Ying? Asked Bill. I guess it's the upstairs room, replied Jack, remembering the space beneath the roof of the house. I don't know why we're here. Crimble has held Inara captive a lot longer than us. Inara scratched her knotted hair. Both Jack and Bill waited for her to give them an explanation.